Welcome back to We Are YA. I'm your host, Felicity.
And I'm your co-host, Shannon.
And on this season of We Are YA, it's the Vampire Academy Recap Party as we celebrate the release of Peacock's Vampire Academy series, which is based on the best-selling books by author Rochelle Mead.
Each week, we'll be looking back at the books, hearing from Vampire Academy fans, and recapping every episode of the show. And we'll even have some special guests, including author Rochelle Mead.
Welcome to the Vampire Academy Recap Party! We're so excited to be hosting a place for fans to come and share their enthusiasm for the series, as well as deeply and intensely analyze every moment of Peacock's upcoming series that starts airing September 15th.
For today's episode, we're going to look back at the first three books in the series, that is Vampire Academy, Frostbite, and Shadowkiss, and really deep dive into our favorite moments, characters, and of course, epic scenes. We're going to be joined by Rochelle Mead so we can ask her all of your must-know questions.
But before we get talking, a big spoiler warning for the book series, because we'll be discussing major plot points in today's episodes from the first three books. So if you haven't read Vampire Academy, Frostbite, or Shadowkiss, press pause. Go on, press it. Go read them, and then come back later. All right, before we talk to Rochelle Mead, Shannon, tell me about how you became introduced, and I ask this with a leading grin, to the world of Vampire Academy.
Okay, Felicity, actually, you don't know this. You think you know the full story. You don't. Let me set the stage for you. Are you ready?
Ready. Very ready. I'm really excited about this.
The year is 2008. Whoa. I am a child. I stumble across my older sister's copy of Frostbite from the library. And, like, I knew I was not allowed to read YA novels. I found this in, like, the basement of our house. So I start reading, and this is book two, so I'm confused. Who is Dimitri? Why are there vampires going to a ski lodge? I didn't understand anything. And I was very sophisticated at a very young age, so I gave up. I was too good for it. And then you fast forward, I think 10 years later, once upon a time, Shannon, a baby, mind you, no understanding of publishing or what to expect on my first day of the job at Penguin, getting walked to my cubicle, I see a book on my shelf, and that book is Vampire Academy. And I made a comment to Felicity about how I didn't like the movie, and
and I turned the place upside down.
And Felicity takes it upon herself to not just summarize each book, but reenact the full series, book by book, with tears, falling down, spoilers, and all. I have proof, by the way. I filmed the whole thing. And that was not just my introduction to Vampire Academy, but my introduction to my new job.
I'm a very professional boss, I will say that. I mean, you had to understand the epic stakes that Vampire Academy was in the Penguin teen landscape. And so I felt reenacting with a live theatrical performance for you on your first day was the most appropriate thing to do.
No, you see, I thought it was funny at the time, and then I sat down to read the books and I was so mad at you for those spoilers.
Oh, I know. But I will say, in my defense, I was preparing you for, like, Penguin Teen often makes jokes about those spoilers and makes kind of funny, like, nods and references.
When you're right, you're right. But that was my introduction to Vampire Academy, and I think you have actually kind of been in the Vampire Academy world for quite some time. So why don't you tell us how your introduction to Vampire Academy came about?
Firstly, you're calling me old is what you're calling me. I see it. It's fine. That's okay. Fine, Shannon. We'll talk afterwards. So I obviously, maybe for those who are listening, you can tell the accent is not American. I'm an Australian. And I used to work at the publishing house in Australia, Penguin Australia, who also published Vampire Academy. And in 2008 and 2009, I was a publicist in the publicity department, and I'd sort of heard about these Vampire Academy books, but not really. And we had the first two out. And one of the sales reps, and this is where, if you ever get a job in publishing, listen to your sales reps. They will tell you what's selling off the floor, had said to me, because she knew that I liked YA books, there's this vampire series that this one store keeps selling really well. And I think there might be something here. And so I'll read them, sure, whatever. I liked vampire books. I was a huge Buffy fan, still am. And I read the first two and was like, oh my God, this is something. This is something intense. We have to get this right away. And then we quickly acquired the rest of the series. And at the time, Twilight obviously was massive. We didn't publish Twilight, but in Australia, we were really kind of cheeky, and we would do things and, like, connect the dots between the readers to Twilight. And I remember, probably highly illegal now, but at the time, from Penguin Teen Australia, we offered a thing that if you were going to see Twilight, the movie, you could send us your movie tickets and we would send you a copy of Vampire Academy, the first book. for free.
What?
Just to help you, to help your friends become addicted to this series. And we did it. Like, we gave a lot of books away to people to spread the love, and it worked. Like, people were like, I love this series. This is great. Thank you so much. And, like, people gave it to their friends, and everyone became addicted. And so that was one of the first moments. And then beyond that, Rochelle toured Australia. So we in Australia, Vampire Academy fans, very powerful. And we were very keen to have her come to Australia. And so she said yes, thankfully. And she came out, and we had some events that were massive, massive successes, above and beyond what even I was expecting. And then I think the best part, my favourite story from that tour was we were doing this joint effort with a magazine where a fan could win the prize to follow the to spend the day with Rochelle and interview her and things like that. And we wanted to sort of have an end of tour party to celebrate the moment. So we had an after party. And I worked with an event planning company who said, yeah, we'll help you organise this. And they booked a nice venue. It was fine. It was okay. And we were like, yep, this is in our budget. And it was all great. And we were going to have a couple hundred people there. And then they called me about a month out and said, we've made a massive mistake. And I'm like, oh, my God, what? Oh, no. We're going to have it in tent. This is terrible. And they said, we booked that venue that we booked for you, that we told you was yours, for somebody else. And because it's our fault, we're going to give you Sydney University's like lecture hall place.
No.
That looks like it's from the set of Harry Potter. It's this huge cathedral-esque kind of gothic thing that looked like it should have been the Vampire Academy school.
I was going to say, I'm picturing St. Vladimir's now.
It looked like St. Vladimir's. And I was like, this is amazing. And I was trying to play it cool with the people going, oh, look, this will do. This will be fine. And then once we could put that picture out to sort of say, come to the after party, people flew from different cities to the after party. They all came. It was amazing. We had Rochelle Reed from an upcoming book that hadn't been released yet. And it was just a really big event where people kind of, everyone in publishing, we all kept turning to each other going, Wow. This is wow.
I'm getting such FOMO right now from this experience.
It was pretty fun. And then also I'm going to say, that in case they're listening, a shout out. We ran a Vampire Academy forum in Australia where there was a very active community board, which I had to moderate. There were some conversations about Adrian, about Dimitri, that I will never repeat again. And if those girls are listening, they know. If those girls and guys and days are listening, they know. But I'm just saying, I have not forgotten. So that was my world of Vampire Academy. But I want to know from you, I spoiled a little bit, but I want to know what have been some of your reactions so far? Because where are you up to in the reading right now?
So I'm up to book 4 right now.
Okay.
And that is thus far my favorite part in the series.
Okay. Well, we're only talking about books.
I know. So I have to not talk about book 4, which is...
That's next week's episode.
That's tough.
That's fine.
So I will limit myself. I actually loved, this is controversial because I also hated it, I loved the ending of Shadow Kiss.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because even though that was semi-spoiled for me, I didn't see it coming, or I didn't know when it was coming.
Oh, okay.
So rather knowing that bad things were in store ahead, I thought that happened in like the last book.
Oh.
And it didn't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it did not.
So as much as I loved the battle at the school at the end of Shadow Kiss, I kind of just loved hanging out at the ski lodge in Frostbite.
I do remember when I read, like, before I'd read them, someone was like, it's book Vampire Academy and then book 2 is Frostbite. I'm like, the vampires go skiing? It was such a weird pitch. And I was like, this sounds crazy. And then I read it, I'm like, it is, but it works.
No, I realized like 10-year-old me did not have taste. I didn't recognize it for what it was
but
at the time.
It's never too late to become a Vampire Academy fan.
No, I am there.
All right. Well, I want to know, what was your biggest shock for the first 3?
Ooh. Biggest shock for Mason.
Ooh.
Because up until then, nothing really serious had happened. There were little things like, oh, a fox got killed and left on Lyssa's bed in the first one. But when Mason dies and then actually doesn't come back, like he's dead,
mm-hmm.
I think that was my biggest shock.
Yeah, and then Ghost Mason is really painful. Like,
but he helps in the
end. I know,
end.
But it's so like, I know he kind of gets, you know. Closure,
like he saves them, you know?
I know, but still, it's just like he's not coming back. He's dead.
Okay, you don't need to rub it in.
Hey, you, my friend, as a recent Vampire Academy fan, have the joy of not having to wait 10 months between Shadow Kiss and Blood Promise.
You know, that's true. Like, the longest I've had to wait is how long it takes me to walk to my bedroom to get the next book out of the box set and then walk back to my couch to read the next one. So,
and yeah, I will say every Shadow Kiss reader who read it when it first came out understands what that pain was like, because I think too, no one expected it. It was a shock twist that everyone kind of was like, whoa. And there were so many cliffhangers, all these different things up in the air about will Lyssa and Rose's friendship? Is Dimitri dead? Bad? Evil? What's going on?
Okay, but that said, you were living these books in real time. So what was your biggest shock?
I mean, I think it was a Dimitri thing of I thought something was going to happen to him. I thought he actually died in the fight. And then to find out that he was missing was a huge dun-dun. But I think too, I agree with you, I think Mason's death was the real, oh, we're going up a notch moment of, and when I tell people to read the series, I always say read the first two books, and if you get to the end of book two and you're not on board, then that's okay.
Well, I think it was kind of interesting because Rose has to live with the fact that she told Mason about the location that he goes to that gets him kidnapped, and kind of reconciling that he also made the decision to go on his own.
Mm.
So it's kind of like this halfway, like she's carrying that guilt, but at the same time knows like Mason made his own decision in that respect. And I don't know, I liked the consequences that all played out very, very intensely at the end.
Yeah. And I'm a firm believer of people have to die in series where death is possible. Otherwise, it just becomes a safety net for everybody and no one's really in trouble.
Are you trying to prepare me for what's in store for the next?
No, I mean, I will say, yeah, no, I'm trying, again, it's been a while since I've read them. I remember the plot points, like they're ingrained on my soul, but like the specific details, I don't know. I'm excited for you. I mean, you've got, not only do you have the next two books in the series, but the spin-off series as well.
I know, so Bloodlines. That's another six books.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's some big moments in that too.
I know, but I assume like if Rose and Dimitri aren't at the center of it, like I'm going to miss them.
I'm saying nothing.
Okay.
I'm saying nothing. All right. We've talked enough about what we think, but I think we need to go to the source of all things. Let's go talk to Rochelle Mead.
Let's do it.
All right, enough from us. It's time to introduce our amazing guest today. She is the author of the entire Vampire Academy series and its spin-off series, Bloodlines. Rochelle Mead, welcome to the show.
Hi. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to see you guys.
We have so many questions for you, Rochelle, so we are just going to jump straight into it.
All right. I hope I have so many answers for you.
I mean, look, we're not holding back here. This was the promise to many of our followers that this podcast was going to be taking the questions to everybody important, and you are probably the most important. So let's get into
it. All right.
Tell me, it sounds way more challenging than it is. It's not. When did you first start writing Vampire Academy?
Oh, that is challenging. I would say maybe 2007, right around there, because it came out in 2008, and it went to print pretty quickly. So it's been many years. What is that, 16? 15?
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That is wild. But the first book is an intro to this massive new world with lots of rules, lots of vampires and creatures. Was anything cut that you now think back and think, oh, I kind of wish I'd had more time to explore that?
Not that I remember. I mean, it really has been so long. I can tell you it went through significant edits. I don't think I have ever had a book that has just been so chopped apart, put back together, rewritten so many times so aggressively. And I remember when it was finally finished, I told my agent, I said, I feel like I have Frankenstein here. I have no idea what kind of reception this is going to have. So it's hard to say. But this is a funny thing. I was recently looking for something to back up a current thing I'm working on, and I found this old USB stick, and there is an early draft of Vampire Academy on it. So if I were, you know, really interested, it would be kind of fun to do a compare contrast. I don't know if I'm there yet, but I could.
I'm almost desperate to like crowdfund that you release it. Like,
I feel bad for everyone who's listening right now because they could not see me and Felicity's faces when you just said that.
I was just like, release it now. From that, in terms of what you were saying about like you weren't sure how people were going to receive it, when that first book went out into the world, what was the reaction like? Was there anything that people reacted to immediately that you thought, oh, I'm going to write into that more than I planned to?
No, it had a very quiet entry into the world. And I can't remember which Twilight book was out around that time, but it was very much sort of getting swept in that wave, which wasn't a bad thing because you'd get the, if you like this Twilight book, you might also like. And so Vampire Academy kind of got this quiet boost along the way. And not much significant happened with its release. And then Frostbite came out and it had apparently been building this sleeper fan base because Frostbite made the New York Times list, which was a huge surprise to everybody. I can't remember the number, but it was on there, which is what counted. And then it just kind of kept building and building. And then I think Shadowkiss's ending is what really poised everything, because then when number four came out, that was just when nobody was ready for the huge reaction. And Felicity, you probably know this because I was in Australia when Bloodlines came out to promote it. And there was standing room only in a lot of places because I think a lot of us, you know, there and in the States just weren't prepared for what had happened between Shadowkiss and Bloodlines.
Yeah. And I definitely think we set, you know, it was around the Twilight period and everyone was like, what do we give these Twilight people who've torn through these books? And it was that comparison, and I enjoyed Twilight as a book, and I enjoyed that series, but I was like, this is better. And I always used to make the joke on a lot of our live event stuff. I used to put up a funny sign that said 100% sparkle-free vampires.
Aww.
And people thought that was the best thing ever, and they were just like, yes, I want to read this series where vampires don't sparkle. And, pun intended, no shade on Twilight. You're welcome, everybody. But it was like, yeah, it was a great way to kind of differentiate the two, at least when we were sort of talking about them. But it was an exciting journey at that point around that. The two and three moment was where it really started to go.
Mm-hmm. But going back to book two and like that breakout moment with Frostbite, we get introduced to Adrian, who just everyone loves. And he quickly became a fan favorite. Did that surprise you, like how fast fans took to him?
It did. And it kind of surprised me how fast I took to him as well. I mean, as their creator, I love most of them, but it was a surprise how fun he became to write. And I think the fans reacted to that as well. I did not expect him to take on the life that he really did. And obviously, as things sort of deteriorate with Dimitri, he really becomes front and center. And I think that definitely helped with the fan reaction too, but he's got his own just kind of thing, you know, he's the bad boy, but is he? You feel for him at the same time and it goes a long ways.
There is an ardent fan base out there for Adrian Novashkov. Like, and actually the casting of the TV show just announced very recently the casting of Leo Goodall. I think it's Goodall or Woodall? Leo? I'm sorry, Leo.
Yeah, I know you're talking about, yeah.
And like, I was like, oh my, I'm going to be really torn here. This is a triangle set up, but I'm going to admit it to you now, Rochelle. I in book two, I did not like Adrian.
Felicity.
I'm sorry. It's because I was ride or die for Dimitri. I'd gone in hard. I'd bought in book one.
For context, Felicity was getting live updates from me while I was reading the series going, I love Adrian. And she was like, brace yourself.
Yeah. But he was such a great introductory character, but I'm also like, no, she's still got to get it sorted out with Dimitri. Get out of the way, son. Get out of the way. But other fans disagreed.
He's introduced as, you know, kind of this complication to Rose and Dimitri, so I can understand why people might not immediately jump on board with that when he's introduced in Frostbite.
I was like, take your perfume and go home. Book two is also, I think, where we see the first real consequence of the world of the Strigoi. And the book two, and you know the moment we're talking about, spoiler alert again, even though we've warned you all, Mason's death.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Mason. What was it like? And you obviously knew you were going to write it, but again, the book breaking out, was this a real key moment you started to hear from fans aggressively?
I did, and I think that was sort of what helped propel Frostbite somewhat, although the reaction I got to that was nowhere near Shadowkiss. You know, we could talk endlessly about my email from that, but yeah, there was definitely,
we will. Don't worry.
There was definitely a huge fan reaction, and it was also my first introduction to the importance of spoilers in my books, because it was an early signing. And, you know, there I am, bright and peppy, like, what questions do you have for me, author Rochelle Mead? And one of the first ones, why did you kill Mason? And there was this collective gasp from half the audience who didn't know that. And, you know, being young and green, it had never occurred to me that this was a thing. And so now I have to preface every signing, you know, don't share spoilers, use code.
I want to know, at what point does that, like, as you said, we're almost 15 years post book one. At what point does that veil lift? Like, when can I say publicly Mason died, everybody?
It should. You would think by now. Well, but will it? Because I feel like we'll probably get a whole new wave.
I know.
As Vampire Academy cycles back into the limelight. I hope it does. But so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we do have to dial back about Mason and other spoilers.
No, I'm going to need to advocate for the new fans here, because everyone deserves to have that revelation and shock on their own. So I'm just going to say, I think the veil still needs to be there for the new fans, because it's an experience. Like, everyone deserves that experience.
We just need to have two separate mailboxes on Penguin Teen's social media account.
Yes.
One for the people who have read the spoilers, and one for the people who haven't read the spoilers yet. We'll just be like two different people. All right, we've talked about it.
All right. So we've talked about Frostbite, but I'm going to bring Shadowkiss into this. Probably the most thrown across the room Vampire Academy book in the series. I'm one of the more recent book throwers in this case, so I have to know, did you always plan to have Dimitri get taken and turned?
I did. That was always seen as the center point of the book, even starting with the first one. And it's funny, I don't know, do you know that throwing that book across the room is not just a metaphor? This literally happens. I have had multiple, just even tons of people come to signings, and they'll bring me their stack of books, and they're all pristine. And then there's Shadowkiss, which they will tell me, I literally threw it into the wall, and you can see. And I had one girl brought me one, and it was entirely like fanned out and almost falling apart. And she said, I was reading it in the bath and I was so upset that I just chucked it into the water. And so it just completely fell apart. But yeah, I always anticipated that. And I grew up with a lot of my favorite books. Just, yeah, that happens. Sorry, your favorite character dies. And I think that isn't as common, or at least in the time when I was writing, I think people always thought, you know, they're going to get out at the last minute. And I think that was what was so shocking to people. And I would get emails. One of the biggest things was, there is no way you can fix this. It's done. How could you? And I kept thinking, I'm the author and this is a fantasy world. I could fix it. You know, you should see that.
Watch me go.
It was all a dream, right?
Oh, that would have been mean, I think.
That would have been mean.
That would have been really mean. But I also, too, like, it was happened... The ending of him getting turned happened after such big moments, back to back to back to back, with like them consummating the relationship and then them walking back, deciding they were going to tell everybody, and then the fight and then the invasion, that I didn't like. I thought, okay, we've survived. Okay, everyone survived the fight. It's okay. And then no, it wasn't. It really, really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just yelling at you now.
No, sure. We're all standing there like, was going back for Eddie really worth it?
Yes, it's the sacrifice for friendship. That's the theme, right? One of the biggest ones.
I mean, I love you, Eddie, but no.
Eddie, you were just a side character. Come on.
His time will come, and it does, I will say. No, that's a very vague spoiler for you, Shannon, but I'm just saying. His time will come, so probably it was worth it in the end. Okay, Eddie, you can have it. Fine.
Yeah, well, we got to watch spoilers for Shannon, don't we? We're talking about other fans, but which book are you on?
You can talk up to Blood Promise.
Okay. All right.
Up to and so, including?
Including Blood Promise. I was up until about 1 a.m. last night finishing Blood Promise.
Okay.
And Felicity almost got like a lot of late night texts from me going, the bridge and the steak and the...
and the letter. I know. It's actually really fun watching Shannon react, because having not read them for a while myself, it's been wild seeing someone new. And like, I'm, and she's like, she, I think you finished, you're halfway through Frostbite saying, something's happening here, and they're going to go off and going to go off on some journey. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, you're about to enter the world of obsessive VA fan. I want to know, with the three books in mind, having Lissa and Rose, who up until sort of Shadow Kiss were really connected. I mean, obviously they sort of fought a little bit, but not really. But in Shadow Kiss, they really fracture and they're hiding things from each other. And it really obviously comes apart at the very end when they have that conversation on the road and Lissa's like doesn't quite understand why Rose is just ditching school and peacing out. What? How did you like build that without showing your hand so much?
I think it's just bit by bit. You know, I mean, not to be cliched, it's show, not tell. You see those little things and you don't realize until the end where it's going. And I certainly hope, and it seems like it was, it comes as kind of a shock. But at the same time, you think, oh, you look back and it was just one thing after another. And I think that's true to life with a lot of fractures and friendships and romances. It's always the little things that build up and people either ignore them or they don't deal with them, and that's when it explodes, and that's kind of what happened to them.
Best friends.
And speaking of like maybe not so best friends, Christian and Rose teaming up to fry Strigoi in that battle at the school, that is a personal favorite scene of mine. And I like to imagine that while you're writing the scenes, you're like acting it out in your office with like full movements and battles, right?
I vision it in my head that way for sure. I always picture it very cinematically. That is a huge fan favorite for sure, the Christian Rose team up. And it's a favorite of mine because they're both such extreme personalities. So of course when you put that together, that's always fun. But I just love having a guy and a girl who aren't romantically involved doing stuff. You know, and I think that's rare sometimes because it's always like, oh, they're fighting, but there's sexual tension. And there is not. You know, they've got this platonic love/hate relationship. And so it's great just to see them together and just to see them kicking ass as well. Because we've always known Christian has this power and he can be destructive, but it's kind of been off and on throughout the books. And when you've got this evil attacking, then just to see all that unleashed, it's gratifying in that sense as well. So yeah, I love that. And people love actually the whole Christian Rose bonding throughout. I think that's the book where they make meatloaf, or is that in Shadow Kiss? I can't remember.
I think it's
that's Shadow Kiss, yeah, because Shadow she's Kiss. Guarding him, yeah, and has to go to his cooking class.
Yeah, that's a fan favorite too. And it's funny, it made it into the graphic novel, which you'd think it would be kind of the small detail that gets streamlined out, but there it is with him taking it out of the oven. And yeah, it's great.
It's an important scene.
No, it's not enemies to lovers. It's enemies to reluctant friends.
But that's why I agree with you. I think we do often see, particularly in YA, a lot of every relationship a girl has with a straight guy and a straight girl, you see a lot of, you know, will they, won't they? This is going to build to something. This could be a ship. This could be a new couple. And it's very clear that no, they mutually sarcastically respect each other as they have grown to see how they treat the same person they have in common, mm-hmm, with such care and love. But there's never a sense of, ooh, but maybe he might like Rose. Like, no, it's all good.
Yeah.
And actually on that note, there's a lot of iconic couples in the VA, and particularly obviously by the time I get to Shadow Kiss, most of them have sort of shown themselves. Is there any, what's the wildest kind of couple hope for? And maybe Christian and Rose is it, but is there anything that you've heard from fans where someone's, you're like, where did that come from?
No, I have a feeling if I could ever like bring myself to look at fan fiction out there, I have a feeling that's where we'd see some of the most unexpected stuff. Or maybe not unexpected. I fully imagine there's like Adrian Dimitri couple fan fiction there. I'm certain of it. But I've had my blinders on to that. But now it's
probably safe.
Now that you mention it, man, I don't know.
I will say I did see and this is a while back. It was Principal Alberta and Dimitri.
Interesting.
which I was like, no, but no question mark, not no emphatic.
No, I'm not sure how I feel about that, Felicity.
Depends on the context.
I didn't write it. It wasn't me, Shannon.
Moving into all of that fan love of this universe, when did you realize just how big the series had gotten? Like, what was the event or moment that really stood out and made you think, like, I really created something here?
I would say for sure it was, again, the Blood Promise launch and reception to that. Actually, I would say there's 2 points. So for sure, just the turnout we started getting. And I remember I kicked off the Blood Promise tour, I believe it was in Seattle. And there's this picture of me. They put me, it was very interesting. They had this giant staircase and they put me on the landing, like that's in the middle, to talk to people. And then there's this great panned out shot and you can see people like lining the stairs and filling the upper floor and the bottom floor. And I think that was just a huge, like, oh my God, where is, you know, what is all of this? And, that was for sure a very visual example of what had come of that. And then I'd say the other moment was Spirit Bounce released. It debuted at number one on both the USA Today bestseller list and the New York Times, which I think was a surprise even to Penguin when that news came in. And I remember people were calling their publicity department, like, who is this? Because a lot of, you know, the people who cover that kind of thing had never heard of Vampire Academy. And it was another example of its kind of sleeper status. And so that was another just shocking moment to me as well, because I kind of wondered, wow, where did that come from?
I know. I remember that moment. And I remember specifically the media stuff when I was a publicist, that we had to write a lot of cheat sheets for journalists about what had happened in the 5 books leading up to the final. And like, here's a 3-sentence thing so they could kind of understand what this huge epic building series was and where it came from. And no, it wasn't that Twilight book. It was different. Mm-hmm. And it was a whole explanation. And then, Rochelle, I don't know if you remember that when you toured Australia, the big moment I remember for you in the Australian tour was we'd done a lot of great events. And then we went to a shopping mall a little bit outside of Sydney. And you and I got there kind of early, but not too early. We were sort of, and we were kind of walking around the mall trying to find the bookstore we'd never been to. And I'd never worked with this bookseller before. They were lovely. And we kind of get, and it's a big shopping mall, and we're standing at the hallway entrance to sort of one of those, like, you know, where you walk past all the shops and everything. And there was this massive queue of people all lined up as far as the eye could see, and it snaked around a corner. And I was like, I think you even said to me, oh, what's this? And I was like, oh, I think it's for some soap opera drama. They might have a signing out here for that too in the center stage area. And we were kind of a distance away, so I couldn't see it. And then as we got a little closer, someone came up to both of us and said, what's this for? Oh, no, we asked them and we were like, what is this for? And the person went, oh, it's a Vampire Academy author, and looking straight at Rochelle, having no idea who she was, and was like, the Vampire Academy author's going to be here. And we're both like, okay. And I think at that moment we stepped back.
I remember exactly. I know what you're talking about. And I remember driving over there and you were just like, oh, it's this suburban little town. And, you were a hip city dweller and like, we're from the suburbs and we're like, cool. And you're like, I don't know. And then we walked in and it was just like, yeah, what is this? It was, and yeah, I remember you had a hard time. You're the one who manages the line, trying to move it to get people through. You want everyone to have their moment, but it was a big crowd to manage.
Well, and I think the signing was in the afternoon at like 5 o'clock after school, but the mall closed at 7 and we were running out of time. Mm-hmm. And we just had to kind of like, I didn't want anyone to not have their moment, but I'm also like, they're going to close the doors on us here. Like, very quickly, we're going to be locked in here. And security had also kind of not really realized it was going to be as big as it was. And I think we were all sort of, they all kind of came along and it was great. It was fantastic. And I think it was a really nice, mm-hmm, shout out to the Sydney people who came to that signing. You were all fantastic. It was a great, great moment in the tour that Rochelle had in Australia. So that was my memory of like, that was the moment that I think media in Australia and also bookstores who didn't get a tour event went, oh my God, I've missed something here. And then also even the same thing, the Penguin Australia office was like, I sent photos back on a BlackBerry because that was how long ago it happened. And people were like, what? And I was like, yeah, I wasn't lying when I said this book series is huge.
Yeah, Australia had a huge turnout, not just that event. And it was great. There was the fan enthusiasm was wonderful.
We had a good time. All right. We have asked all of our questions, but of course, like Dmitry Belikov, we never hesitate. And so we've also asked the fans. See what I did there?
Yeah, good callback.
Wink. I've got the puns, I've got the callbacks. So we asked fans to submit some questions via our Instagram stories, and we asked them to stick to Vampire Academy, Frostbite and Shadowkiss as of today's episode's theme. So we have some good ones. So Shannon's going to kick it off.
Yes, and our first question is, what is something that you really liked but had to cut out?
Oh, geez. I'm not sure I can cite anything in particular, but I will tell you the stuff that gets cut the most are things like the meatloaf. And those are the things I live for, are these little like slice of life, rambling banter conversations like, oh yeah, well, yeah, typical, you know, that. And I could fill like half a book with that kind of stuff. And that's always what gets, I won't say it gets cut first, but obviously an editor is wanting to keep the plot streamlined and the pace moving. And so those are the things that you find getting chopped out along the way, unfortunately. I need to delve into those files again and see what's there.
I can just hear thousands of Vampire Academy fans screaming.
Just screaming, give us more meatloaf. More meatloaf scenes.
Right, the meatloaf scenes.
The extended meatloaf scene, right? Yeah.
Oh my God. I think we should release it for Christmas, Vampire Academy meatloaf cut, and just have all these little vignette scenes.
You know what? Not to break the flow of these fan questions, but I actually thought of something in the middle of this, and this is going to be revolutionary, but I was thinking back to what you asked about what got cut in Vampire Academy 1, and I remembered something, and it's a good thing you're sitting down. I can't believe I forgot this. Rose and Dmitri, in the original, very first draft of Vampire Academy, had sex in the first book. Yeah. I know. I can't believe I literally remembered it just now. That's how often it's been chopped up. And I remember my editor, a couple editors at Penguin said, you can't do that in the first book. It's got to have a slow build over the books before you get to that. And that was true. I do believe that now. I don't always agree with editors.
I mean, yeah.
That was spot on. And the timing went well with his turning.
But did it happen? And I'm going to ask all the questions I can hear everyone screaming to ask. Whereabouts did it happen? Was it the charm necklace scene? Did it happen at that? Or
Yeah. I think it fully escalated. And then, you know, after the charm scene, you move into the final battle there with Victor. And I think it was like that. It was just they went a little farther than where we left off.
I think that's a good decision. I agree with that final decision.
We got the shadow kiss scene. I think it was worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, that Kevin scene. Focus, Felicity, focus.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry to throw things off. I should have remembered this before, so.
No.
Tell us more, like, revolutionary things.
We'll see. If it pops into my head along the way, I'll let you know.
So next question, how long did it take you to write each of the books? Not by hours, minutes, and seconds, but maybe months.
A first draft I used to be able to knock out in a few months. It did not take long. Now to get it to print was months more, certainly, because you do go through multiple revisions with editors, and then you've got the fine tuning of copy edits. And I always joked it ends up almost being a 9-month process, like a baby before it gets in condition to print. But I could get those out pretty quickly. And it's funny, I'm working on something right now, and I don't know, I started it in April. What is it, April, May, June? I'm at like 5 months, and it feels so long to me because I'm comparing it with Rochelle of 15 years ago where I could do this. And I keep thinking that's the normal time, 3 months, but I'm not sure it is.
I'm trying not to ask all the questions I want to know is, what are you writing? When is it coming out? When can we read something? But I won't, because that's secret information. But I'm excited already. The next question is one of my favorites, because not only is it a great question, but because the account handle who asked it is very funny / leads into this question. So the account that asked this question was Little Miss Ignores Red Flags. And the question is, who inspired Christian?
I don't know that anyone did. At least not in particular. I mean, maybe there's this collective subconscious thing where it influenced me. But there was no one person. I think I just really loved the idea, getting back to the so different, they're the same, falling in love of Lyssa, the elegant princess, and her love match is just, he's kind of obnoxious when you meet him in a wonderful way. It's a different kind of obnoxious than Adrian too. He's just super abrasive with good reason. And I liked that contrast, both to see how, you know, what happens when those two sides collide and how do they rub off on each other? Because I think in a lot of relationships, you don't want to change for the other person, but I think you can influence and hopefully improve certain things and heal certain things when you're with the right person. And so that was kind of what I wanted to see with them.
And for our next fan question, do you have a favorite side character? And if yes, who is it and why? It's very controversial.
I certainly do in the Bloodline series, but I got to keep that back. This is super side, but I think in the early books, this might not be in book three, Deirdre the therapist, she's in book four, I think.
No, she is in book three.
Is she in book three? Oh, because of Mason, that's she what is. She's, yeah, because Rose is gone in book four. Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, and I know that's probably a really weird, obscure thing, but I don't know, I liked Rose in therapy just because it was interesting to see someone like Rose have to be challenged with her feelings and talking about them. And Deirdre is kind of an extreme therapist type, you know, how do you feel about that? How do you, you know, and it ends up kind of driving Rose crazy. But I enjoyed kind of putting Rose on the spot, having someone do that to her. And she didn't react well to it, which is telling in itself, which is part of the reason she needs to deal with that kind of thing. But yeah.
Oh, Rose. Our complicated queen, how we love her so. This is an interesting question, and it's a very yes or no answer. Is in the books, who is older, Dimitri or Sonia? / apparently this is a very hotly debated question at the moment.
I would say Sonia.
Okay. There's your answer, fan who asked that question.
Yeah.
That's by much or?
I'd say maybe by a couple years, 2 to 3 years maybe. So not too much, but you've got to, I guess, imagine she's gone to college to be a teacher. You know, St. Vladimir's has high standards for its instructors. And then if she was teaching at all, it would kind of stack on there.
I'm glad someone asked that because I was actually wondering that too. So thank you to whoever asked that. And moving on to our next fan question, how did you come up with the perfect book boyfriend, a.k.a. Adrian?
The perfect, what was it, Maroy boyfriend you said? Or
the perfect book boyfriend, but you know what? Also the perfect Maroy boyfriend. Also the perfect Maroy boyfriend.
Shannon didn't wear her I Am Adrian of Ashcroft's number one fan t-shirt today.
I know. I left it at home.
Oh, boy. Those were good times, too. The Team Dimitri and Team Adrian shirts. Wow. That was not something I never expected in my career as an author. I don't know how I created him. We mentioned earlier how he was sort of introduced as this complication for Rose and another love interest. But I think part of what made him what he is sort of letting him go to those extreme sides of his personality. I think often in trying to make good book characters, they end up being very bland because you don't want them to stray too much. They kind of have to be even keeled. And Adrian and many characters in those books, they're just like, they've got their demons and their quirks and they aren't perfect. And I just started just running with it with Adrian. But it just had to be tempered with sort of the reasons behind it. And you had to make sure you could see inside of him to where it's coming from. Because otherwise they are just annoying shallow characters. And so I think it was that contrast to just have all this, you know, darkness and, you know, sarcasm, but you kind of see he's got his reasons. He's had his past and you feel for him.
I mean, we're going to talk about it next episode for sure, but Adrian goes on a journey in these books and then Bloodlines, everybody. Don't forget Bloodlines.
Yeah, so much Bloodlines.
You don't know, Shannon, so much of Adrian's journey in Bloodlines is just chef's kiss.
It's really like a hero's journey, right? You know?
Right. But my favorite thing was, and you're not on next week's episode, so we can't talk about it, so I'm going to talk about it to you now. It's not a spoiler, don't worry. But at the end of Last Sacrifice, I remember the book came out, a lot of people didn't know that Bloodlines was coming and that Adrian was going to get his own story. And I remember you got heaps of angry, like, DMs and, well, not even DMs at times, but like tweets yelling at you for how it all ended with Adrian.
Yeah, it was like, I won't say it was quite like the shadow kiss response, but it was big. And that was actually a huge surprise for me. I'm not surprised people were upset that Dimitri got turned, but I didn't expect that about Adrian.
There's people who are still, like, to this day, like, even yesterday when we announced it on Twitter who the cast member was, there was a lot of people talking about he deserves justice. And I'm like, go read Bloodlines. Justice is there. It's on the page. All right. Next question. I keep getting distracted. So many things to talk about.
Our next question's a little bit controversial. Why did you decide to kill Mason off instead of somebody else?
It had a bigger impact. I mean, that's... Mm. It's as simple as that. If some random side character is killed off, if, you know, Deirdre the therapist, we enjoyed her thought-provoking sessions, but we're not losing sleep over it, you know, and Mason, you do, and it sort of raises the stakes. See, I can do it too, Felicity, for what Rose is facing and the seriousness of this. You know, the Strigoi aren't these like stormtrooper type characters. You know, they're a blur. You shoot them down, you're done. I mean, they can get back at you. And it was part of Rose's journey that she had to experience this loss and kind of set her up for what was to come as well.
That I remember reading that scene and her sitting afterwards with the sword and the blood, like I could see it and everyone like, oh, and I was like through my hands, just no. And just knowing how much this was going to change her in terms of it was the this is consequence world now. And I've said it to people before, the reason it's one of the things I say, if you're reading Vampire Academy, read to Frostbite. And that's when you're going to know what's happening because it's a world where people could die. And I love that about any good vampire series or paranormal series. I'm like, you can't have these blood-sucking, thirsty, villainous people walking around and everybody's happy and fine. It doesn't feel, like, threatening then.
For sure. And I get asked a lot if I have any remorse for killing Mason. Like, people at Science, do you feel sad? Do you feel bad about that? Like, nope. You know what? I'm cool with that. I planned that from the beginning. But I will say that the film and TV adaptations do give me pause. I very much liked Mason in the movie, and I like him a lot in the show. I've seen a couple episodes, and that kind of makes me feel bad. I don't feel bad about my own book. You know, it was like, oh, sorry, your time has come. But I see, you know, they were excellent casting jobs in both of them. And so now I'm kind of getting a little squeamish for, like, because I don't know what's coming. I hope I'm ready. Yeah.
Well, and I think Julie Plec, the creator at Comic-Con San Diego, which if you haven't seen that panel, it's on Penguin Teen's YouTube channel. Little plug there, little promotion. But she did mention that they have rearranged the order a little bit because they loved the actor so much and the way he was portraying Mason. Mm-hmm. They all kind of went, no, I don't think we're ready for him to kind of get turned in, like, you know, end and be killed in like episode two. So I think it might catch us all by surprise what happens and when it happens, which I'm excited for.
You know, and not to stray into the show too much, I will say one thing that's fascinating to me is that in moving around the order of stuff, and most of it is still there, you're going to see most of the things from the book. It has me kind of on the edge of my seat because I know it's probably coming, but I don't know when. And after seeing the first two episodes, I'm like, I got to see what happens. And you'd think you should know what happens, Rochelle. And I don't know what they're going to do. And so
that's exciting.
Yeah, we're all going to be waiting for Mason. I mean, not wanting it, but you know, when's it going to come? You don't know.
Oh, this is a tough one. It's not me asking, it's the fans. Who do you ship more, Lissa and Christian or Rose and Dimitri?
Ah, oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Rose and Dimitri clearly are the drama, the center of the book. My heart has to go to them the most. I mean, so much is built into that arc. But there is something really nice just about, for the most part, Lissa and Christian have very few bumps. They've got some, and it's great just having the stress taken off of having to write every moment between them so poignantly, you know, and, you know, pulling at your heart. I mean, you've got them as a couple, and it's just fun sometimes to do that.
She's going through enough. She needs to have a solid man in her life. Christian's the, like, yeah. It's in the first three books, it's not fun for Lissa.
No.
Poor Lissa Dragomir.
Yeah.
Okay, my next question. Oh, this is a good one. How do you think the story would change if Rose were the one who became Strigoi in Shadowkiss?
Wow. I've got to tell you, like, I get, like, 90% of the questions I get asked are variations of questions I have been asked for, like, the last 15 years. And this is one I've never been asked, and it's so exciting. Ooh. When that happens, especially when it's, like, one that's thought-provoking. I don't know. I mean, I so love the idea of Strigoi Rose. Like, I'm just sitting here with my mind blown right now.
I know.
I think Dimitri would go after her. I think he would have that same situation. It would be a slam dunk on that.
My concern was when I saw that question, I thought, I think Rose would actually, I mean, Dimitri would actually be more successful than Rose and probably kill her.
I think you're right. I mean, yeah, it's because she does hesitate a little bit, you know, she's got her moments, and I don't know that Dimitri would. I also feel like there would be no hesitation on, like, when he does it. I mean, Rose has to wrap up some things at the academy before she takes off. Like, I think as soon as, like, that scene, like, Dimitri's on the road right then, stake in hand to go do it. And then
he's got a bag packed. He's out the door.
He's already had it ready for, like, you know, when friends turn. Yeah. And then I guess it would just depend on where Rose goes and where that journey goes. But
I also feel like, though, Rose would be a bit more of a Carnage kind of person as a Strigoi. Like, I feel like she'd take out, like, Lissa, and she'd, like, really try and, like, I just see her, like, creating mayhem in a more showy way than Dimitri, who was running his little Russian mansion of vampires.
Right. He's like this Godfather Strigoi type, right? And
right.
That's not what Rose is. Not to say Rose doesn't have leadership qualities, but it's a very different kind. She's, you know, the into battle, you know, here's what we're doing, guys. But he had kind of that mastermind playing all the pieces thing.
Okay, you both are breaking my heart. So I'm going to move on to the next question. Our next fan question is, why is it important to you to talk about mental health through spirit users?
I feel like, well, mental health, period, is something to be addressed. It's not as much as it should in all forms of media. But spirit use, I mean, you think about it, spirit as something internal. If you're manipulating that and using that so much and you're giving yourself to other people, logically, you could see that taking a toll. And metaphorically, I think that is also something you find a lot with mental health, is people who are constantly giving themselves or backing off or going through these changes. And so it became a good and fitting medium for it, both because, again, it almost makes sense with what they're actually doing in the book, but also a platform just to show that, the effects of that, and that it's a real thing that both has consequences but can also be lived with once, you know, actions are taken, because I think that's a piece that's often missed as well.
And I do think it was a case, and I don't, again, I'm probably generalizing, but I just remember, I don't remember mental health being used in a paranormal or a fantasy so clearly that way before. And if it was, it was a very strict lesson. And this was more about Lissa learning to live with this and learning to know her emotions and know herself, and not just like this mental health issue for her was going to be the end of all of her opportunities and the end of her life being normal. And I think, you know, I know I remember seeing fans talk about it constantly. You must have heard from fans too about it as well, how much it meant to them and still means to them.
I did. I would say by far I have had more people who address that respond to it as a positive thing in the books, you know, a good way to sort of highlight that and its importance. But I did get negative responses to it. And this circles back to my thing before about how central characters are often sort of this neutral, boring, well-rounded type without any extreme traits, because I think a lot of times in YA, they're supposed to be seen as kind of this role model type, your central character. And so I think people coming in with that perception, they see Lissa as a main character. And I would get emails accusing me of endorsing that behavior because, you know, she is our main character and, you know, are we supposed to look up to them and be like them? And I don't ever think my characters should be models. They're flawed. And, you know, hopefully, if anything, overcoming that is what we should look at. But it was hugely surprising in parents. I would get parents especially thinking I was telling their teens that this is what they should be doing. That was a surprise.
All right. The final question. So many questions. You've answered them so well. The final question. What scene of the first three books was the most difficult for you to write?
I think just from a technical point of view, the central scenes that bridge you from the beginning of a book to the endings are always the hardest because you need them, you need people to stay interested, and it needs to make the endings, which to me, I always call them my big rock endings because they're so explosive.
Yes, we know, Rochelle, we know.
You've got to get that payoff. And so building to that is always so difficult because it's got to make sense. They aren't going to have that big impact if you didn't pace it correctly. And it's always so difficult because I want to write the action scenes and the romance and the funny dialogue. And there's a technical side that has to be dealt with.
Well, you have passed so well with both our questions and the fan questions. I think you stood up to the test, but
There is one last test, Rochelle.
Uh-oh.
I hope you are ready. There actually is a pop quiz at the end of this episode. We're going to test how well you remember the first three books in the series.
Okay.
Are you ready?
This isn't on the script. Can I play too?
You can play too, okay. but Felicity is your backup. So okay. You have some backup for this.
I'll be your phone a friend.
Some of these are easier than others.
Can I pull up a Vampire Academy wiki off the web while we're here?
That's cheating.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's cheating.
Let's go.
That's such a Rose Hathaway question.
All right. I will go easy on you. Here is the first question. I think it's the easiest one. How tall are Rose and Dimitri?
Dimitri's 6'7".
I was going to say 6'7" for Dimitri.
Is Rose 5'4"?
Are you ready? Yeah. Rose is 5'8".
Oh, my God.
What? Really? Is her mom?
Our girl is tall.
I mean,
her mom is short. Okay. Her mom is, I think, like 5'2" or something.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
5'8".
All right. I'm going to say that's half a point, though.
Oh, okay.
All right. So our next question is, what is Dimitri's most important lesson?
Don't hesitate.
Yes.
I was like, I said it earlier.
Easily confused with his first lesson, which is
run away.
Run. Yes. I was
going to run. Yes. All right. And our last question for the first book is, in the first chapter of Vampire Academy, Rose and Lissa have a stray cat hanging out with them. What is the name of that cat?
Oh, my God.
I thought you were going to ask the name of the roommate. I'm like, I can't remember either one of them.
That I do not remember the cat. That one makes me feel bad. I'm really not losing sleep about Rose's height, but the cat's bugging me. I don't remember the cat.
Any last guesses, Felicity?
No, not a clue.
All right. All right. That cat's name is Oscar.
Okay.
Oh. All right. But we are talking, that is the first like page of book one. So, you know, that was a while ago.
Yeah. Oscar didn't clearly stay with me, so.
He's only in that first chapter, but you know what? I thought he was memorable and deserved to be mentioned. So, Frostbite questions. Are you ready? All right. What is the name of the female Strigoi helping Isaiah at the end of Frostbite?
Oh my God, it's been so, no idea.
I'm happy I remembered that there was someone helping him because that I would have felt really bad if I'd been there. Like, I don't think there's any such character. It's a trick. There was, and no. Don't got it. I'm sorry. You're killing me. Felicity.
Maybe some of our fans playing along got this one. It is Elena.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, nope, not ringing any bells. It's clearly been a hot second.
You know what? You get a pass, Felicity. I know it's been like a second, but I think maybe you need to reread these books.
I've got post-traumatic stress from what you did to Mason.
That's fair. I think this one's a little bit easier. Who gave Rose a black eye in Frostbite?
Her mom.
Exactly. Yes.
That mother-daughter relationship.
That mother-daughter.
One of my most favorite complex relationships ever.
I also just love the dynamic of Rose being so much taller than her.
Yes.
I think that's so funny.
Which is something we've just relearned.
Yeah, now we know the specifics of it. Yeah, there's half a foot, right?
Our last Frostbite question is, where are the Strigoi headquarters located in Frostbite?
Is it in Spokane where they attack?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, like, Seattle, Spokane. Yeah, okay, yep.
Exactly.
Was it in, like, isn't it in the tunnels? And they had to go through all these tunnels, and there was, like, am I remembering?
Yeah, it's in the mall. The tunnels,
that's
like.
That's right. Yep. And they were like, oh, yep. And every time they were turning corner, keep going further. I was like, stop, go back. This is a dumb idea.
Yep.
All right, we are in our final round of questions. This is Shadowkiss. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
All right, what is the name of the secret society Jesse and his friends tried to get Lyssa to join?
It's not an English name, right?
That's true. I think we'll accept like the English translation of what it is too.
Jeez.
That's not helping me.
I know they had it at Adrian's old school, which is called Alden, but I do not remember the name.
Is it like something to do with the body part?
Yes.
It's like the hand?
The hand. That's it.
Yes!
All right, question two. When Strigoi attack the school, what word does Dimitri tell Rose to give the guardians to warn them of the attack?
I know this one in my sleep.
I hope it's Beria. Is it?
Yes, that is correct. Felicity, and what does it translate to?
It's storm.
Storm.
I know. Strigoi I'm like, there's a coming. Storm is coming. There's a storm coming.
All our hearts dropped.
As soon as he said that to her and like he stayed, I was like, oh, we're in trouble now. We're in real trouble now.
All right, final question. Oh. What do the tarot cards warn will happen to Dimitri?
He'll lose what he values most?
Yes.
Okay.
Whew. See, I keep forgetting there's tarot cards because I was like, did you have tarot, was there tarot cards in Bloodlines as well?
I don't know, but I'll look it up for when Maybe. You quiz me on Bloodlines. I'm gonna be ready for
that's okay. We didn't even give you a warning about this pop quiz. So
I love that next episode you come back, it's just gonna be Rochelle spitting facts. The I'll whole
be like,
time.
I have some questions for you, Shannon, and then we'll see.
No, come at me. I am like recently have read these, so I am all about the trivia right now.
Well, Rochelle, that's it.
That's it.
You passed it all. Thank you so much for joining us on. No, you did so good. You did so good. Thank you so much for joining us on We Are YA, which was our very first episode of the Vampire Academy season we're having.
Yes, thank you. This was fun. Embarrassing, but fun.
100%. So it sort of feels right that you were part of the first episode because you're the creator of the world. Are you maybe going to come back and join us because you've had so much fun for another episode?
Yeah, I'll be back if you'll have me.
Of course. And of course, for everyone listening, we're going to be recapping the show as it airs in the US on Peacock. So Rochelle can come back and maybe we can talk through an episode about the things that we weren't expecting and different questions she might have about what's happened and changes. I'm excited to get into it because you've seen some episodes, correct?
I have. And I would love to talk about them. Like it's hard. I have no one to do it with. So yeah.
Well, you can come back and talk to us all about that. And that's episode one done. Be sure to join us next Friday on the Vampire Academy Recap Party Season as we chat about the shocking twists, turns, and tears, yes, you, Shannon, that happened thanks to Blood Promise, Spirit Bound, and the epic finale of Last Sacrifice.
We'll also be counting down our excitement to the Peacock series release, and we'll be joined by Penguin Teen staff member Carter, who will share their thoughts and reactions, as well as just how far they made their mom go in service of being a Vampire Academy fan. Talk to you all next Friday.